talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard Line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It is, and it's my pleasure now to get ready to escort you into a different way of thinking. A very different way of thinking. This is going to be quite a program, I guarantee it. It was just a number of years ago that I decided, in retrospect, egocentrically, I think, that I would begin some experiments after hearing a number of my guests talk about consciousness and perhaps the power of mass consciousness, you know, millions of minds concentrating on one thing. I began to engage a series of experiments. And there were 9 or perhaps 10 or 11 total, I think, by the time I finally decided that it was wiser to stop this course of action. But in the beginning, we tampered with things like Mother Nature. We were getting stories, for example, of a drought in Texas. And so I made people stop in the middle of a commercial break, and millions of people close their eyes and concentrate on rain forming in that area of Texas. And let me tell you, within hours, out of nowhere, without it being anywhere near being in the forecast, clouds formed and rain came. In fact, so much rain that in parts of Texas, they flooded. The same in the northwestern part of the U.S. and Canada. They had a terrible drought. We did it again. Again, the rain formed and came when it should not have, when there was no forecast of rain. Try and imagine that. A couple of times, maybe. But 5 or 6 times in a row, no way. I began to become an absolute believer myself. How could I not? There were instances of praying for people who had serious illnesses. The same level of concentration was applied. The people came back and said, "Oh my God, I was in the hospital. I felt it happen, Art. I felt it happen." So without going into detail of all the different experiments we did, they were all at that level. You know, big things. Somebody who didn't have much of a chance of living. Weather systems that ought not be there, that we actually created with our minds. I mean, after you've done this 10 or 11 times, you begin to realize that you're onto something. It really works. This is a gigantic power. But with it comes the knowledge that you could make a mistake and that there could be unintended consequences. So as a result, I stopped doing it. But my interest could not be higher. Could not be higher. And so this is natural for me. Bill Sweet wrote the following: after their mysterious, unexpected suicides between the 7th and 12th of May of 1993, I, as president of Spindrift, I think that's the name, Spindrift, spent years haunted by their memories. Alas, 12 years later, the Klingbeil Spindrift story is told. A journey in a prayer would come across to your listeners as a spiritual X-file, and a tale of the way of politics of prayer and the parapsychology, the way it works. Bill Sweet, and he's a ham, KF9DK. Bill Sweet graduated from the Nutrier High School and Illinois State University with a major in communications. He was president of an entertainment booking agency in Chicago. That's interesting. His avocations include being an investor, an audiophile, and a ham radio operator. Bill was always interested in how consciousness and prayer relate to science and religion. A natural connection between like thinking people resulted in his involvement in the research of prayer and consciousness at Spindrift Research, where he became president. A favorite quote of Bill's is by Charles Steinmetz, the father of modern electricity. Someday, the scientists of the world will turn their laboratories over to the study of God and prayer and the spiritual forces which as yet have hardly been scratched. Well, sounds a little religious, doesn't it? But it's not really going to be. This story, although it's going to have, I guess, connections to the concept of God and whatever else there may be, really was not religious. A lot of scientific double-blind studies have been done. In fact, the foreword to this book is written by a doctor who himself became a convert after doing his own experiments. That would be Dr. Larry Dossey. And so, in a moment, comes Bill Sweet and a story you've never heard. Never. You see, it's my belief that after the experiments I did and thinking I've done about the subject, and it's simply my conjecture that one day mankind is going to find out that mass consciousness is the single most powerful force in the universe. Let me say that again. The single most powerful force in the universe, dwarfing the splitting of the atom and all its various applications, some good, some bad. And so I think no less of this, and I think that much of this, and this will deal with sort of the fringes of all of that, the story you're about to hear. Here is Bill Sweet. Bill, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
Where are you?
I'm right outside Chicago near O'Hare Field.
Oh, okay, excellent. Two guests in a row near Chicago. I don't even know where we begin. It's long-form talk radio. We got plenty of time, so I guess we should begin in the beginning with you and how you became interested yourself in this and got involved.
Been always interested in the paranormal, been always interested in religious things, spiritual overtones of things, try to relegate them together and bring them into a scientific concept. It's just all these things together, and of course it's kind of hard to mix all these things together, but I've always been interested in that. And I just happened to meet a gal, and she said, "You have to meet my father and my brother." And they were Bruce and John Klingbeil. I live in Mount Prospect, Illinois. They lived in Schaumburg, Illinois, which was three towns away. And they were professional healers for the Christian Science Church, known as Christian Science Practitioners. And they were also very interested in natural science. They had some natural science background, too. In fact, Bruce Klingbeil, the father, wanted to be either a forest ranger, a Christian Science practitioner, or a natural scientist. So kind of all these things going at the same time when they got into the Spindrift area of research. And so when I met them, I found out they were doing these terrific experiments. They were just basic science, simple experiments with plants and with some parapsychology tests, too. They were inorganic tests.
So what were they trying to accomplish? What were they actually doing? What were the experiments?
Well, the idea of it was is that they were trying to show that there was something to it, because they found that in the more sophisticated age, people were having experiences, but they could describe them in different ways. Oh, I would have gotten well anyway, or this would have happened anyway, or maybe I was misunderstanding what happened.
You're referring to the power of prayer, so the audience understands. You're talking about praying?
I am talking about praying. And so what they wanted to do was find a way to isolate certain characteristics of prayer so that in a scientific context, you could show that there is something going on other than chance, other than belief, and show that there is something going on at a distance, what we call paranormal, that the consciousness is affecting something at the distance. And so what they did was is that they set up some experiments, not dealing with people because people were too complex to deal with at first, to deal with plant systems. And they would, for instance, they would set up things that were naturally happening in nature, with like soybean seeds, for instance. They would take them, and they'd have people pray for the soybean seeds that were under some kind of stress, like the stress might be that they were over-soaked. They had too much moisture, and so these young seedlings could not prosper because they had too much water. So a person would pray, and they would find that the result of the prayer would be that they would, the soybean seeds would give off water and move to more to a normal state. And that would be compared to a control group of soybeans that was not prayed for, that was not recovering as quickly. And over time, you accumulate the results, and you can show something's happening there.
Do you know how complex the experiments were? For example, how many people were in the groups during the prayer? Any idea?
Well, what we were doing were one-on-one experiments, one person praying for one experiment. It wasn't a group thing at
this
point.
All right.
We were trying to show that there was a connection between the healer and the healee, between the subject, the person praying, and the object. We were trying to make this connection. And this is what we were trying to do in our simple experiments. Now, we would have other experiments with soybeans, too, where they would be undersoaked, and the soybeans could not prosper because they didn't have enough moisture, and the person would pray. And what would happen was the seeds would take on moisture from the air, and they would move towards normal as compared to a control group. Now, those are experiments that people might say, well, I've heard of things like that before. But what is interesting, like taking that example, was is that we could bring in people that were very experienced with prayer from different backgrounds, that were healers and energy people and things like that. And they wouldn't know what they were praying for. They didn't know what the need of the plant was. They knew that there was a need. They didn't know if it was over-soaked, under-soaked. They didn't know what the problem was, but they would pray for it. And what we found was is that if you could set up soybean seeds that were over-soaked next to soybean seeds that were under-soaked, and you had somebody that really knew how to pray, that same prayer would help the seeds that were over-soaked give off moisture, move towards normal. At the same time, that prayer would help the other group of seeds that were undernourished with moisture take on water and move towards normal. So the same prayer
produced
two effects.
Yeah, I hear you. Here's a bigger question, though. We don't know the effect of the field. In other words, you might be praying for one plant or even praying for two plants, but how do you know that plants 100 miles, 200 miles, the other side of the earth, did not in also some way respond? Do we know the field of the effect of this, how direct it is?
Well, I suppose the butterfly effect applies to everything. You cannot isolate thought completely. But we do have another experiment that was, in fact, a demonstration of how close you can get to isolating an effect. The Klingbeils took a mold and put it on a petri dish and put a string down the middle of it and rinsed it with alcohol, not enough to kill it, but enough to hinder it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a side A and a side B determined by the string, and a healer would determine which side they wanted to pray for. But let's say side A was the control group, but they decided to pray for side B, and they were able to show that the prayer enhanced and affirmed side B, and several more rings would grow on side B from the prayer, but side A did not grow anymore. So there is a degree to which you can isolate thought. You're not always that fortunate, but there's an experiment where you can. Now, that wouldn't mean that on some minuscule level that something else, because of the butterfly effect, isn't being affected. There's a lot of interesting guesses about that.
Well, you said the butterfly effect, that refers to a butterfly flapping its wings in South America, causing a windstorm ultimately in Australia, or something like that.
That's correct.
But that's not what I'm asking. What I'm asking is the direct effect. If you're praying for a plant or casting out a general prayer, and it affects two plants with two separate problems, what we don't know is how far the actual field itself, what it encompasses, whether it's just going to those particular plants or it's, forget the butterfly effect, but actually its radiation is limitless and might go around the whole earth.
Well, it could be, but there wouldn't be any way to measure that. It very well could be. And I would think that that would be for future investigations, but yes. What we're trying to do is find a way to measure things. That would be kind of a guesswork. I mean, I would believe that every prayer has an effect that goes on and on, just like sending out waves out goes on and on. They're saying that we could go back and trap the waves of Abraham Lincoln speaking. We could put together his speeches again. We could get all his waves together.
Was there anything cultish at all about what the Klingbeils were doing? Was it cult-like at all?
It was perceived so.
It was?
It was, yes. The idea was very taboo when Spindrift started in 1969. Up until about 1995, December 1995, the idea that you could mix the scientific method with some religious concepts, with healing, with parapsychology, and come up with a combination that would be workable, and with all those combustible things working together, became an anathema to many people, and they just did not like it. I mean, church groups actually prayed against our group. People lost their jobs. We've had divorces. We've had our literature ripped up.
Church groups prayed against your effort?
It's true. Yes, we happen to know. I mean, we had a flood of hate mail. It would tell us what was going on, and people would let us know, sure.
What was the center reason, the when you got this hate mail, what was it centered on, please?
I would say that it's centered on tempting the Lord, people say you should never tempt the Lord of these things, or God's power cannot be brought into the laboratory, or parapsychology is the work of the devil and you can't bring that in.
Really?
Oh, yes, and science is inadequate to measure spiritual things and things like that, and just anything you can imagine. It's really something. I've lost friends over it, and it's
Bill, really how was the immediate area aware enough of what you were doing to take up this effort against it? Was it in the press or what?
Oh, well, we had quite a few things in the press. In my book, for instance, A Journey into Prayer, I have a whole chapter there on our connections to politics. The president of Spindrift was a guy who ran for the Republican candidate as governor of Colorado, and the only thing, John Andrews, the only thing they could find bad about him was his connections to a bunch of kooks, so-called, that prayed for plants in a laboratory and thought they got results. And that was the chief thing they picked on him through the whole election. And that got all over the national press. We were in the Washington Post.
Well, that answers my question. That's how they glommed onto you. And so they hated your guts, basically, meaning the religious side. And then, of course, there was the other side, the scientists.
Yeah,
and I imagine they were equally upset.
I'm sure you know about this. A lot of the skeptics claim they're atheists and everything else, but actually I've seen equal amounts of fundamentalism from the skeptics as I had from the so-called religious fundamentalists. They just go berserk on things like this.
You mean scientific fundamentalism?
Yes. Oh, sure. I think some scientists call them scientific supremacists.
Huh.
The thing is that I think it worries people that it worries religious people that this gets out into evil areas. It worries the skeptics that it gets out into this wild thing that the world's going crazy. If people start believing this stuff, even if it's true, we're going to have people on the streets doing psychic stuff and mass consciousness and everything. We can't have that.
Well, that person might have a point. When you look around at some of the consciousness at work in individual minds, it's a worry. It's a concern.
Yes, well, in fact, the Spindrift Research, Bruce and John Klingbeil and some of their family members and some other people, after this started getting stirred up about Spindrift and everything, they realized that there are some bad consequences out there. More people, they realize that some of this stuff might actually be true about consciousness, that you can affect things and affect people. It's a Pandora's box.
You know of my experiments, right?
Yes.
Well, I can't recall ever else in my career when I walked into something as powerful as what I walked into with those experiments. And it totally, totally freaked me out when I realized what I was tampering with. And reality hit me, and I realized it was stupidly egotistical to blunder around in an area that I knew nothing about. I stopped. And that caution was reaffirmed by others that I've interviewed from Princeton, you know, the guys doing the consciousness experiment there.
Diggs. Diggs experiment, yeah.
All right, brother, hold on. We'll get right back to you. What you're going to hear is going to be a whale of a story of the Klingbeils, what they did. and the tragic end they came to. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell.
Sweet dreams are made of this. Who am I to disagree? I travel the world and the seven seas. Everybody's looking for something. Some of them want to use you. Some of them want to get used by you. Some of them want to abuse you. Some of them want to be abused.
Talk with Art Bell. Call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call Art at 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art Bell by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
When Bill Sweet wrote to me, he suggested that I read the epilogue to the book. And he was ever so right. It sets up exactly the path that we want to go down. As we talk about this perhaps greatest power in the universe, this mass consciousness that I've toyed with in the past, don't anymore, but this giant power that, believe me, is, in a moment I'll read you that epilogue and you can judge for yourself. I think this might help you understand what Bill Sweet and the Klingbeils were doing. It's been said that gratitude is the highest form of prayer. I'm grateful that the Klingbeils' pioneering research has sparked others to research prayer and consciousness. If holy prayer produces any noticeable effect, restored order is part of that noticeable effect. Proposals to test the proposition that prayer produces calming or healing effects is beginning to be attempted as a part of the investigation of human consciousness, the brain, the effects of holiness and spirituality. Bruce and John Klingbeil used all the know-how and all the equipment they could muster to test the proposition that prayer produces several kinds of effects, including ordering effects. Referring to Bruce and John Klingbeil, two researchers at the St. Louis Medical Center wrote, quote, "Their work enters the further reaches of parapsychological research. Reading these sections, one has the distinct impression that the authors reached the limits of current scientific methods in exploring the questions they raised. Was the payoff worth the punishment? No good deed goes unpunished. The hated Spindrift has received for introducing experiments, testing prayer makes me wonder if the Spindrift effort was worth the turmoil and unhappiness it caused some of us associated with the experiments. I hope the payoff was worth the time and money we spent. Speaking for myself, life would have been a lot happier had I not known Bruce and John Klingbeil's experiments, but life would have been a lot less intriguing. One intrigue was to watch the wild negative reactions to unconventional ideas for marrying religion, consciousness, and science. Even the tragedy of 9/11 points to the importance of testing prayer. Spindrift knew that prayer wasn't always motivated by good. There is a dark side to prayer. At least as seen globally, when terrorists revealed they prayed 5 times a day, then they killed people. Philosopher Pascal penned Men never do evil so completely and cheerfully as when they do it from religious conviction, end quote. After 9/11, a UFO researcher wrote me saying, quote, who needs invading aliens to destroy the earth when we have religious terrorists, end quote, in question. 9/11 provided proof that the brain's conditioning about God and prayer could potentially annihilate mankind. The world's democracies may be forced to acknowledge that the war on terrorism is a war of ideologies of love and hate and intense belief about prayer. And then in bold print, world patterns of love and hate may become as necessary to track as weather patterns. For the religious terrorist and meek alike, the following words of Dr. Albert Schweitzer point to higher motives in prayer for mankind. Quote, we must realize that all life is valuable and that we are united to all life. That's really important, united to all life. From this knowledge comes our spiritual relationship, if I might, to the universe. When it's established that prayer does affect people, the moral makeup of each of us will tip our prayers to include our neighbors, or lock and load our prayers to kill our neighbors. Our holy motives in prayer, or lack of them, are in proportion to what we believe is the true nature of God. We need only look at the world today to see that our deep motives in prayer result in physically affecting mankind. Mrs. Eddy writes, quote, the crudest ideals of speculative theology have made monsters of men, end quote. As mankind increasingly discovers it's in a computerized century, it seems likely that everything worth investigating about consciousness will gradually be given a chance. Since the Spindrifters raised science questions about consciousness and prayer that created outrage, perhaps the worst outrage is over for now, and other researchers can move freely to investigate the effects of prayer, spirituality, and consciousness on healing. So I'll stop there. But basically, that gives people an idea of what you've written about here, Bill, when you wrote about these two men, a father and a son, right?
That's right. A father and son, both professional healers, and both were interested in showing that there was some provability to this, and it caused a lot of bad things along the way. And it's very interesting what you said, that you stopped doing these things. It probably scared you. You found out there was an effect, and it scared you. It's kind of interesting because it reminded me during the break that we had a couple people who did our Spindrift experiments, and they wanted nothing more to do with them after that. It scared them that they could actually see that their thought did something.
Yeah. Well, yes, and I was toying with it at a kind of gigantic level. I mean, creating rain where there was none, where there was no humidity in the air to even produce the rain, and then creating it. You know, the first couple times, I guess I chuckled and said, wow, that's amazing. By about the 10th or the 11th time, Bill, I had begun to reflect on the possibility of doing something. I mean, for example, in Texas, we prayed for rain. We got it all right. They had flooding. It can go wrong. People wrote to me about, I even toyed with the idea of perhaps diverting a hurricane. But then it occurred to me, okay, fine. What if we divert it, but just by a little bit? It sits out in the warm Gulf waters, growing larger and larger, then hits land. In other words, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, Bill. And based on that realization, yeah, I stopped.
Yes. Well, there, you got it. And so there are ramifications to all this research, but, you know, we have to move forward. Every invention has its bad things. We all know the story about the atom bomb. We had to split the atom, but it could have been used one way or used another way. And prayer, unfortunately, can be used for good or bad, and consciousness can be used for good or bad. And I suppose the future is going to be kind of a tipping point. Either we're going to go forward when we discover what can be done with thought, or we're going to actually take our discovery of what mass consciousness can do, use it upon ourselves, and annihilate ourselves.
Well, Bill, I'm really in favor of going forward with it, even though I personally stopped. You know, I'm just a talk show host. The people who should be going forward with this are the scientists, and maybe the religious people too. I don't know. And I'm not sure, by the way, Bill, I'm not sure the two are related. I think that prayer is just like closing your eyes and not appealing at all to God, but appealing for rain and trying to manifest rain. So, Bill, in my own mind, I don't know that this power is actually related to God. And that gets you in a lot of trouble when you say stuff like that.
Well, let me take a crack at it, okay?
Be my guest.
Have any proof about God. But I think that what we can make as a good argument is a distinction that we make at Spindrift between prayer, which is goal-oriented, which is praying for rain or whatever, and prayer, which is non-goal-oriented, which is praying for what is best. And when we get into this area where we get our own ideas away from what we think we want to do, but pray for what should turn out to be the best in the situation, we find results that we don't anticipate that are normalizing for a situation that actually don't bring danger and bad consequences along with what we desired. And what that means in terms of the spiritual argument is again, we can't prove the existence of God. But we think that we can prove through non-goal-directed prayer, which we call Thy Will Be Done prayer, when you get the ego out of the way, is that a cultivated consciousness of these spiritual qualities and premises and desires to have what is best for a situation to occur brings only good results, but you can't anticipate them. But in the ultimately, you see how it normalizes the situation, harmonizes the situation.
All right, but there's a big but here, though.
What's that?
Well, it's but what I just read. For example, if the men who drove those airplanes into the World Trade Centers prayed hard enough, God knows, it suggests they prayed five times a day devoutly before they decided they would do their deed, and their deed resulted in, you know, thousands of innocent people being killed, thousands of Americans being killed.
Right.
They succeeded, and the power of their prayer apparently was as great as the power anybody might manifest for the good.
You have a very interesting point there, Art. We don't know how this is going to eventuate. It would seem at this point that people's goal-oriented thoughts and goal-oriented prayers are more powerful, it seems so, than the power of good thoughts. It's this tipping point concept that we could tip either way.
But Bill, it's subjective. In the minds of the men who were praying for success in knocking those buildings down, to them, from their perspective, it was a good thing.
But it didn't produce good.
That's from our point of view. I hate to put it that way, but that is from our...
Well, it is our from point of view, but we would define good as producing order,
from
not disorder.
But their prayer was to produce disorder for a goal that they considered good, smashing of the great Satan.
No doubt about it.
So even good is somewhat subjective.
Well, yes. People have crude ideas of good. There's no question about that.
What there seems to be no question about is the real power of this of prayer, the real power of... Is it your position, Bill, that the more people involved in this goal-oriented
power, the stronger, no question.
The stronger it is.
Yes. But then again, one person with a clear thought in a way that nobody else is knowing what they're doing can break through that. I'll tell you, let me just cut in just real quick. It's a kind of a complicated concept, but I'll just say that When a person prays alone or in a secret, you know, as Jesus talks about shutting the door and being in the closet, all that, what you're trying to do there is come up with a strategy of praying for something that's undefended, that nobody else is thinking about. If a whole mass consciousness is on something and you're trying to pray about that too, you're going to get nowhere. They're going to overwhelm you. But you have to pray about something that they're not thinking about.
All right, let's take a what if, Bill. What if we had found out ahead of time what the goal of these men was, that is, that their goal was to drive these planes into buildings, into the Pentagon, had the world or the U.S. known about that, do you think that the prayers that would be on the other side of the question, heaven knows God, I'm sure, is getting sick of being appealed to by two sides of an argument?
Well, there are three times that Jesus says, don't just pray, also watch, which is translated to mean being alert to what's happening around you. And if we had been more alert to what's happening around you, we would have known what to pray about and what physical actions to take, too. We were asleep.
How?
That's the reason we had 9/11.
Let's go back. Yeah, we were asleep. No, you're right. And so their prayers were the ones alone heard on the subject until the event happened.
Well put.
Yeah, that's just a fact. Now, I'd like to understand how you became president of... By the way, what does Spindrift stand for? Anything?
You know what? That's what they remember about this. I didn't like the term when I got involved in the group, but it's the one thing that people remember. It's a nautical term. It's in most dictionaries. It refers to the you're talking about hurricanes and storms out at cyclones. It's a storm out at sea stirring up the wave, and the wave is moving so fast that the edge of the wave, the spray, becomes almost a physical form of water, and if it hits your face or something, it's like nails going into your face. It's a rare phenomenon. I've only met one person in my life who's been in Spindrift or seen Spindrift, and they almost lost their life, and it's something you don't want to see.
So again, this is what is on top of a monstrous wave.
Yes.
An atmosphere of extremely dense water. Is that fair to say?
It's very thinly. It's the chip of the wave. It's the spray at the top of a wave, and it's being blown by the wind. And we use that as the symbol for the name of our group because it symbolizes this cutting edge between the visible water and the invisible realm of vapor there, like consciousness. So we're right at the cutting edge doing research at the cutting edge of visible matter and invisible consciousness.
All right. When you met these two men, did you at that time form Spindrift, or was it already there?
Oh, it was already there. I met them in the late 70s. They had been working on from 1969 forward. It incorporated as a nonprofit organization in 1981 in Illinois, research organization. Mm-hmm. But they were doing these experiments, and they were getting people coming in to volunteer to pray for experiments. And they were my job when I became president right away. I had to find statisticians to hire to keep track of the data, and I had to procure scientific equipment for them. They had Bruce and John Klingbeil in 1977 when I met them. Had one of the very first Apple II computers, one of the very low serial numbers on the first one. And they got right into this stuff and started automating some of their experiments. They were using hand scales to measure seeds and yeast cells and different kinds of systems. And we were also, they used one of the very first random, well, not one of the very first, but one of the first amateur attempts at it. They had a random event generator built for the computer, and John Klingbeil, the son, prayed over the circuits in there, and we compared random numbers, what would happen if you prayed over them, and they would go into different patterns that weren't random. It was very interesting.
Oh, this is so fascinating. Of course, you know that's what's going on at Princeton, and
that's right.
I'm certain that you have to be very familiar with...
Oh, yes, and we worked with the Klingbeils in a friendly relationship for a lot of years. I mean, they were well familiar with each other. We were the amateurs and they were the professionals, but there's been a lot of communication back and forth. Very wonderful people there and other places, too. There's just been some wonderful people in the parapsychological community.
How amazed are you, Bill, at the experiments going on now at Princeton with the eggs?
I find them very encouraging. And there was just a meeting of 8 or 10 of those guys getting together, you know, your guys you've had on like Russell Targ and
oh yes,
and they got together and they're not going to be too strong in how they feel about it because then the skeptics will jump on you. But they really think there's something there that it's you know there's a problem with the signal to noise level on some of those things, but there's enough evidence to show that something is going on.
I'll say,
and it's very exciting because what is going to happen is that, like you read from my book, that someday democracies are going to have to take seriously the idea of judging world love and hate going on. It may be that this is a prototype way of doing it through the egg experiments, which is the global Gaia experiment, basically kind of through random numbers monitoring unrest in the world, things going on in the world, and these numbers jump all over the place when big news events happen.
They absolutely do, and their hit rate is beginning to be better than any of the psychics I've ever had on this program, and so I'm beginning to watch those. And by the way, the audience should know, you can actually go to a site at Princeton And you can look at these, you'll hear a heartbeat, which is really eerie. And then you'll see these, all these different scales of these different eggs scattered all over the globe, reporting in. And you'll see the graph going up and down, and bells ringing, and buzzers going off. And it's all kept on a graph like a, you know, like an earthquake chart, kind of like you'd see, you know, whenever we have an earthquake, they show on TV and you see the chart and then you see the sudden swing. Well, that's what they're looking for in this experiment. And these sudden swings occur hours before events like 9/11, 4 hours, the thing went berserk before the event. And as we go back through history, I don't know how many years now, a lot of years, it's just nailed them one after another. So they're beginning to be curiously miraculous.
Unbelievable. That's Roger Nelson's experiment. He started that.
Yes.
And it's exciting. And you made me think of something I hadn't thought of, but I have it in the book, but I didn't tie it up until now, and that is that Bruce and John Kleinbeil, I don't know the years, but I'll say it was the early 80s, late 70s, made a prediction that what would actually end up might be the thing that establishes as a smoking gun that such a thing exists, a psychic thought and consciousness thought and even prayer thought, would be machinery, not human beings, because machinery are more objective than human beings who are subjective.
Huh.
And so here is an example of that. You have these inanimate objects called random event generators that are actually established, and there is such a thing as action at a distance, non-locality, psychic experience, and consciousness effects, not human beings, not psychics. It's kind of interesting. And part of the reason for that is that human beings are potent receptors of psychic phenomena, spiritual phenomena, but we're not objective about it, the output. We try to turn around and explain things, and we get all messed up.
All right, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be right back. My guest is Bill Sweet, A Journey into Prayer.
She musters up.